We
are.
We
are.
We are cultivate.
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 We are cultivate.
Hello and welcome to Ye Olde Crime, where we discuss the funny, strange, and obscure crimes of yesteryear. I'm your host, Lindsay Valenti, and with me is my sister and co-host, Maddie Stengel.
Hello.
Hi. I have three quick things before we segue into the episode.
Okay.
As always, I want to thank the lovely Carrie Ann for her research assistance for this week's episode.
Thanks, Carrie Ann.
And because it is the first episode of the month, I also want to thank and acknowledge our monthly supporters over on Buy Me a Coffee. Thank you, thank you, thank you. If you would like to support us on a monthly basis, we no longer offer Patreon, but you can head on over to buymeacoffee.com/yeoldcrime, and you can support us for either $1 or $5 a month, and we give you a little sneak peek into what we will be discussing for the month. So you get to know before anybody else, even Maddie.
Even me.
What we will be discussing. And you can also submit your own requests. So that is a fun little bonus you get by doing that. Last but not least, we will be celebrating our 200th episode later this month.
That's crazy.
Which is insane. And we want you to be a part of it. So send us your questions. Any thoughts, feelings, favorite episodes, well wishes.
Yeah. Shout outs.
By May 15th, so you can make it in for the episode. And you can either slide into our DMs on Instagram and Twitter, or you can email us directly at yeoldcrimepodcast@gmail.com. I'm going to close the cubby now. And I'm very excited about today's topic.
Okay.
Because we will be discussing the lone woman of San Nicolas Island.
Ooh.
San Nicolas Island?
I don't know, but I'm intrigued.
Color me intrigued. Information was pulled from the following sources. A 2022 Islapedia compilation, which, after the episode, if you want to learn even more, go back and click that link.
Nice.
2021 at California Missions article. 2019 National Park Service article, 2018 VC Star article by Cherry Carlson, 2017 Common Lit article by Jessica McBurney, 1981 Journal of California and Great Basin Anthropology article by Travis Hudson, Atlas Obscura, Kittle, and three Wikipedia links. And links to all of these will be included in the show notes. Looking for more content? You can find us online at yeoldcrimepodcast.com. If you'd like to see pictures from this week's episode, not to mention bonus content and funny memes, make sure to follow us on Twitter at yeoldcrimepod and on Facebook and Instagram at yeoldcrimepodcast. On TikTok? Of course you are. Follow us at yeoldcrimepodcast. We've covered a few islands over the course of the show, such as Povelia or the Plague Island.
Yeah. The original.
Everyone's favorite.
Yep.
You know, where they make wine.
Out of bodies.
Out of the dead peoples. And Roosevelt Island, where we discussed the Renwick Smallpox Hospital. Also where they plan to do like a COVID-19 whatever.
Weird revival thing, yeah.
But in this episode, we're going to be discussing not just the island, but specifically the woman who was left on that island.
Oh, she was left there.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
Changes
so let's
things.
Get started.
Okay.
San Nicolas Island is part of the Channel Islands off the southern coast of California. San Nicolas in particular is the most remote of these, located 61 miles or 98 kilometers away from the nearest point of the mainland coast.
Dang.
So it's out there.
Yeah.
And for 10,000 years, it was home to the Nicolino tribe, Uto Aztecan people who had close ties to the people of the Santa Catalina and San Clemente Islands.
Okay. So just kind of like friendly, independent tribes.
Yes. Because the Channel Islands aren't terribly far from one another, but far enough where there would be a lot of similarities amongst the different peoples, such as their language was kind of similar.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the Nicolinos were part of the Takic branch and related to the modern-day Tongva of Los Angeles County.
Okay.
The island was first spotted by explorer Juan Rodriguez Cabrillo in 1543. Not white. Spanish.
I was going to say, wow, that's a very not white name. Got it.
Yep. But no notes were made of any inhabitants on the island, and none of the ships ever made landfall. He was just like, look, there's an island.
Okay, so they just didn't see anybody at first glance.
Yeah, he was just like, oh, look, there's some land. And then he just kept going.
Okay, bye.
In December 1602, Sebastian Vizcano, who was a Spanish explorer, gave the island the name San Nicolas when he visited it. He noted that it was densely populated, and the people who lived there were skilled sailors. I would hope so. Given that it is an island.
Pretty remote.
It'd be bad if they weren't. We don't go in the water.
One survivor and all of his children.
Oh, God. It's like Noah in the Ark, but just on that island. The people of the Northern Channel Islands were the Chumash, and the Tongva occupied the Southern Islands. So they were kind of on like the southern section. Little is known about the history of the San Nicolas and the Nicolino tribe prior to the Spanish's arrival and into the early 19th century. It was at that point the population of the island itself had dropped significantly, likely due to the fact that the Spanish missionaries had been relocating members of the tribe and others from the other surrounding islands to the mainland in order to recruit and convert them, just as they had been doing on like the larger Channel Islands that were closer to mainland California.
Got it.
This story in particular really starts in 1814, when the brig Elmina landed at the island. Owned by the Russian American Company, or the RAC, it was manned by a party of 25 to 30 Aleuts and Russian fur traders from Sitka, Alaska. And they were there because they were searching for sea otters and seals in order to harvest their pelts.
Interesting. What a crazy gaggle of people.
I know, right? The members of the Elmina killed many of the tribesmen after they refused to allow them access to their women.
Great.
Who these traders and hunters would go on to sexually assault.
Great.
By the time the hunters had left the island, there were less than 100 Nicolino left alive.
And it was densely populated previous to this.
Yep. And at that point, we don't know, because it's not documented, like how many people had already kind of been shifted to the mainland.
Yeah.
But based off what we kind of learn later on in the story, I don't think they really had started that process yet. Because by the time the 1830s rolled around, only around 20 members of the Nicolino tribe were still alive on the island. Although some sources list their number as low as 7, consisting of 6 women and an elderly man named Blackhawk, who had suffered a head injury during the Elmina massacre. And once the missionaries learned about the island's survivors, the Santa Barbara Mission sponsored a rescue. In July of 1835, Captain Charles Hubbard and his crew boarded the schooner Peores Nada, which is Spanish for better than nothing.
That's really funny.
And they headed out to the Channel Islands to bring the remaining Nicolinos to the mainland.
Yeah, I don't know if I would confidently set foot in better than nothing.
Yeah. Like, when I first learned that's what it was called, I was like, "Hoo boy, like this.
That's a choice."
Yeah. And when you hear what happens to the ship later, you're going to be like, yeah, yeah. Foreshadowing. So a storm was rolling in as the tribe boarded the schooner. Captain Hubbard returned the ship to port before they could be stuck in it. So they like loaded up and he's like, we got to get the hell out of here.
Mm-hmm.
This was when the lone woman, as she was known, was left behind, as she was unable to arrive before the storm hit. Although other accounts state that she refused to leave because she couldn't find her child.
Mm, okay.
She was described as between the ages of 20 and 30 with a light complexion.
Okay.
Now, Captain Hubbard had every intention of going back to get her, but he was unable to head back because he had been given orders to take a lumber shipment to Monterey, California, before he could attempt another rescue.
Okay.
And before he could head back to Santa Barbara, the schooner hit a heavy board in the San Francisco Bay, and it sank.
Oh, shit.
So it really wasn't better than nothing because it sank.
That canceled plans.
Mm-hmm. And because there was a lack of ships at the time, no further rescue attempts were made.
Hmm.
Meanwhile, the remaining members of the Nicolino tribe had made the choice to live at the mission San Gabriel Archangel. As was extremely common for indigenous peoples throughout history, they soon found themselves falling victim to the diseases that ran rampant at the mission.
Yeah.
Black Hawk, for example, the elder, fell blind shortly after arriving.
Oh, that's not horrific at all.
And he died quite suddenly when he fell off a steep embankment into the water and drowned.
What?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it wasn't long before the rest of the survivors had passed away from various illnesses.
That's awful.
Over the years, at the urging of a Franciscan priest named Father Jose Canales Rubio, several more attempts were made to rescue the lone woman, until she was finally found by renowned hunter Captain George Nydever after 18 years alone in July of 1853.
Oh, man.
Captain Nydever's crew consisted of Carl August Dittman, a.k.a. Charlie Brown, Fred Forbush, Thomas Jeffries, and an Irishman referred to as Colorado, along with four indigenous peoples from the mission who had spent... Nice. A month kind of circling and exploring the island in hopes of finding her.
Okay.
Charlie Brown was the one who had actually spotted human footprints on the beach, as well as pieces of seal blubber that had been let out to dry.
Mm-hmm.
In an account, her rescue is noted in part as follows. Quote, when Brown first saw her, there were these wild dogs all around her. They were a great blank once to her. It was kind of a smudge. Brown found her in the brush enclosure. She started, but regained her composure proudly and offered them wild onions, which she was roasting.
Nice.
She was not dark, they say. Her hair was light brown. Her hair was knotty and disheveled, and she did not wear a hat. When she was received, she was a woman about 40 years of age, end quote.
Okay.
Captain Nydever noted his initial encounter with her in his book, The Life and Adventures of George Nydever. Quote, the old woman was of medium height, but rather thick. She must have been about 50 years old, but she was still strong and active. Her face was pleasing, as she was continually smiling. Her teeth were entire, but worn to the gums, the effect, no doubt, of eating the dried seal blubber. Her head, which had evidently been for years without any protection, was covered with thick, matted hair that was once black, no doubt, but now it had become of a dull brown color.
Mm.
Her clothing consisted of but a single garment of the skins of the shag, or a cormorant, made in the form of a gown. It fitted close at the neck, had no sleeves, was girded at the waist with a sinew cord, and reached nearly to the feet. She had another dress of the same material and make in one of the baskets. These were sewed with sinews, the needles used being of bone. This place was undoubtedly where she usually lived, but in the rainy season she lived in a cave nearby. End quote.
Hmm. I love that she was super fashionable and like cinched her waist still.
I know, right?
Still designing it at the time.
So you're probably like, how did she survive?
Right.
She had been living in a round brush enclosure that was built about 6 feet or 1.8 meters in diameter, and about 5 feet or 1.5 meters tall. And it had a narrow opening on one side.
Okay.
She used a fire inside her home to cook her meals. And Captain Nydever noted several similar structures in various states of ruin around the island, with some of the brush walls being supported by whale ribs.
Okay. So these are the different places she moved.
Or they could have been the remnants of the people who had been there before. She protected her food by hanging seal meat from a series of long poles measuring 4 to 8 feet tall, or 1.2 to 2.4 meters. Others would be hung from ropes that had been stretched between the poles, kind of like a clothesline.
Mm-hmm.
Like other indigenous people in California, the Nicolino were skilled basket weavers, and Captain Nydever noted that the lone woman made 4 different shapes of baskets. At the time that he had found her, she had been wearing a dress fashioned from cormorant skins, which is a type of aquatic bird, that was decorated with feathers. She also had several possessions that were crafted from sinew and bone. By the time the lone woman had arrived in California with Captain Nydever in August of 1853, the rest of her tribe had already died.
Mm.
And none of the local indigenous tribes were able to translate her language.
Oh, no.
She was around 50 at this time, in good health, and very happy and pleasant, according to all the crew and everyone who ever met her.
Yeah.
Captain Nydever and his wife, Sinfrosa Sanchez Nydever, who was Spanish, and she did not speak any English, decided to take her in, even though she couldn't communicate directly with them.
Right.
The mission sent various indigenous peoples from other tribes around the area to go speak to her to see if they could find somebody who could sort of communicate with her.
Yeah.
Including people from the other islands within the Channel Island chain, but she was unable to understand any of them.
Darn.
She was able to use sign language to tell part of how she survived, that her child was killed and torn to shreds by wild dogs, which is great.
Oh, jeez.
And the complete opposite of that, she entertained people by dancing and singing.
Ah, okay.
She really liked to dance and sing, so she was very spry.
Okay. Sad.
News of the lone woman's discovery and rescue spread like wildfire, and papers often referred to her as a feminine Robinson Crusoe.
Oh.
Or the California Wild Woman.
Interesting.
Sadly, just like the rest of her tribe, she soon took ill, contracting dysentery, and passing away just 7 weeks after she'd been rescued on October 19, 1853, in Geary, California.
It's really sad.
In an account about her, her illness was noted as follows. Quote, living in house, food, excitement, and disappointment began to tell on her, gradually faded away. At last, Mrs. Nydever got her seal meat and took it to her. She patted Mrs. Nydever's hand, could not eat it. One day she fell from her chair, sank into unconsciousness. Nydever sent for priest. End quote. Prior to her death, she was christened Juana Maria. Her true name has never been known.
They'll never know.
And she was buried at the Nydever family plot at the mission where the rest of her tribe perished. So she is in an unmarked grave, but it is within the Nydever family plot.
Got it.
Unfortunately, the dress she had been wearing when she was rescued, along with the possessions she brought to the mainland with her, have been lost.
Convenient.
Yeah. Examples of her basket weaving, as well as a stone mortar, which she had used, had been preserved in the California Academy of Sciences and were photographed, but they were destroyed in the 1906 San Francisco earthquake and fire.
Oh.
Fun fact. It's rumored that her dress had been sent to Rome and was lost within the Vatican Museum.
Interesting. So it could still be there somewhere.
Other items that she had, which had been lost, include a shell fish hook that was about as thick as a pencil, a necklace made of limpet shells, a sandal, which had been made from strips of woven grass, a bone knife, and a bone awl, which is a small pointed tool used for piercing holes, like in leather.
Okay, nice.
I had to look that up because I didn't know what an awl was.
Yeah.
Juana Maria and the Nicolino story doesn't end there, though. The first archaeological visit to the island of San Nicolas took place in 1875, so this is about 22 years later, mm-hmm. and was spearheaded by Paul Shoemaker on behalf of the Smithsonian Institution.
Nice.
He and his team discovered several artifacts from a number of the ruins, which they assumed were part of the later period of the Nicolino culture, as the climate wasn't exactly well-suited for preservation.
Okay.
Some of the earliest collected artifacts on this mission included grass matting and clothing fragments, bone knives, fish hooks, and fish and bird effigies carved from soapstone. As you can imagine, their culture was entirely dependent on the ocean, as the island was home to only four types of land animals, all of which weren't ideally suited as a food source.
Mm. Okay.
In March 1913, a woman named Emma Chamberlain Hardacre was interviewed, who was a local expert on the lone woman. Emma had written a popular account on her in 1880, which had been published in Scribner's Monthly. During this interview, which was conducted by a man named John P. Harrington, Emma mm-hmm. told him that three men attempted to look into the lone woman's history back in 1874, these men being Mr. James Calkins, Henry Chapman Ford, and Dr. Dimmock. The men who had been aboard the ship that rescued her had all been young sailors back in 1853, and mm-hmm. most of them were still living in or around Santa Barbara in 1874. So she would be able to talk to some of them.
Right.
And these men would as well. The three men who had started researching the lone woman were the founding members of the Santa Barbara Society of Natural History. The three traveled to the Channel Islands sometime between 1874 and 1876, and when they visited San Nicolas Island, they noted that they had found brush enclosures and painted caves. A direct quote from an unpublished account written by Emma reads as follows. Quote, "She had kept a record of the time she was on the island, had a stick with whole number of days on the island indicated on it by notches. On walls of cave, she had made record of every ship she had seen. She would motion for ships to come and take her, but when they came, she was afraid and would hide. She dried meat and stuck them in crevices of rocks by the shore, high up where the wild dogs or other animals could not get it. The wild dogs had eaten her baby. They wanted to sew her a skirt out of bed ticking. She was amused. She showed them how she sewed it. Also put a coat on her," end quote. So that last part, it's from her rescue. So the crew were we should make her something other than this dress that looks like she's been wearing forever.
Right.
So they had taken apart some of their own trousers and they were going to try and sew her a dress
out of
pants they'd taken apart. And she was, right. She just thought that was hilarious. So she was I'll do it. So she mm-hmm. took it. Making your own dress.
That's so funny.
In 1939, Arthur Woodward documented the remnants of a whalebone structure on San Nicolas Island that he believed had been used by the lone woman during her time when she was stranded. In 2009, archaeologist John Erlinson from the University of Oregon discovered two redwood boxes by a sea cliff marked with a whale rib. The boxes contained a cache of 200 artifacts of not only the Nicolino, but Euro-Americans and Native Alaskans. It's believed that the boxes of artifacts had been boxed up between 1815 and 1853, and in all likelihood had been used by the lone woman during her isolation.
Cool.
A few years later in 2012, an archaeologist with the U.S. Navy reported finding a site that very well could have been the cave where she lived during the winter/rainy
season. Yeah, the rainy season, yeah.
Since then, archaeologists have found the human remains of 469 people, as well as 436 burial objects on San Nicolas Island.
Dang.
Leaders of the Pechanga Band of Luiseno Mission Indians, who claimed a cultural connection with the Nicolinos, visited the island and were quite upset by how the excavators were handling the remains of the Nicolino people. Mm. After reaching an agreement with the U.S. Navy, who had set up a naval air station on the island, the Luisenos established a cultural claim to the remains and burial artifacts of the Nicolinos. As I mentioned earlier, the Nicolino language was lost forever with Juana's death. Mm-hmm. All that remains is 4 words and 2 songs, and these only survived thanks to non-speakers who recorded them.
Okay.
I'm going to try and say them. They included taca, which translates as animal hide.
Okay.
Nacha, or nache, which stands for man. Mm-hmm. Toigua, which means sky. And lastly, huuche, which translates as body.
Okay.
Again, I apologize if I am mispronouncing these. I am trying my best, and obviously because it is a dead language, it was impossible to find a pronunciation anywhere online. I really tried.
Yeah.
I will not attempt to read the words of one of the songs that she's saying, but I will tell you that it was sung to a very old Cruzeno Chumash Indian from Santa Ynez, and he was able to translate the song roughly as, quote, "I leave contented because I see the day when I want to get out of this island," end quote.
Oh, no. That's a bittersweet song.
Yeah. In 1907, using the little that they were able to collect from her, a man named Alfred L. Kroeber, who was an American cultural anthropologist, identified the words as part of a Shoshonean language, which was part of the northern Uto-Aztecan languages. He's the one that associated it with the Takic branch, which included the Tongva, which was a language spoken on the nearby Santa Catalina Island, as well as by the Luiseno. Hmm. It wasn't until almost 100 years later, in 2000, that another linguist named Pamela Monroe, who specializes in Native American languages, challenged Kroeber's claim, arguing that the Nicolino were in fact part of the Kupan, which is a subgroup of the Takic languages, yet very different from the Tongva dialect.
Hmm.
She theorized that the Nicolino's language was more similar to both the Luiseno Waneno and the Kupeno Kawia branches, and could possibly even be part of a third completely distinct branch.
Hmm. That's crazy.
And if the lone woman's story sounds even remotely familiar to you, there may be a reason for that.
Hmm.
She was the inspiration for Karana, the 12-year-old heroine of Scott Odell's 1960 classic Island of the Blue Dolphins.
That's really cute.
In this beloved children's novel, Native Alaskan hunters come to the island to hunt the otter, and just as in real life, they clash with the Nicolinos, killing most of them. Staying true to history, in 1835, it was arranged that the remaining tribe members would be moved to mainland California for their own protection, if and when the hunters returned. During the evacuation of the island, a young woman is left behind when a storm forces the ship to depart. In the book, some members of the crew say that Karana wasn't left behind, but jumped overboard when she realized that her younger brother hadn't managed to get on the ship. As Odell notes, she survived for 18 years alone, if we refer to the original edition, by eating roots, seal meat, and shellfish.
Interesting.
That was one of my favorite books growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Today, San Nicolas Island is home to the Naval Air Station Point Mugu, and the inhabitants of the island are primarily Navy personnel. According to a 2018 article in the VC Star, it's believed by historians that during the 18 years that the lone woman was on San Nicolas, around a dozen or so ships had landed either on the island or anchored nearby. In fact, it was noted that in 1846, a sailor had even lived on the island for 2 months to guard cargo that had been dropped off on San Nicolas to avoid paying tariffs.
Hmm.
It's unclear if she ever interacted with him or if she hid that entire time.
Yeah, she might have hid the entire time.
Mm-hmm. In some of the accounts that the historians have combed through and are piecing together, it's noted that her son died in a shark attack, and was not, in fact, killed and eaten by wild dogs. It's hard to know what is fact and what is fiction, given that she had no way of properly communicating that information. Mm-hmm. Either way, her son died.
Died horrifically.
Fun fact, conservation efforts are currently underway to protect a species of fox that is native to the Channel Islands. Hmm. Dubbed the Island Fox, it is a descendant of the mainland gray fox and one of the smallest members of the canid species in the world.
Interesting.
And even though it is small, it's actually the largest of the native mammals of the Channel Islands.
Oh, it's cute.
And lastly, in an interesting twist, apparently so many people have taken an interest in the lone woman's story over the years that the National Park Service actually created a webpage dedicated to her and the ongoing research around her life story, as well as the preservation of the Island of the Blue Dolphins.
That's so cool.
And that's the story of the lone woman of San Nicolas Island.
I love it. I also now love island foxes.
They are so cute. Some of the other animals that they have on the island are, there's like a lizard that is native there. There's like some aquatic birds that hang out. And then elephant seals are known to visit the island. So
nice. Dang.
They don't stay there on a permanent basis, but I think it's just one of their stopping points during their migrations. If you want a playlist of all our episodes on YouTube, click the link in our show notes or in our link tree and subscribe today for not only a list of our full catalog, but a separate list as well, just of our Can You Crack the Cramp Word segments.
Do you have a story of survival?
A parent goes to residential school. You know, they haven't had that family connection. Those traditional values and ceremonies that many of us exposed to are taken.
Or have a lost loved one that was involved in human trafficking, exploitation, missing or murdered? My name is Jasmine Castillo, and I am the host of Hands Off My Podcast that brings to the forefront, specifically from Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islander, Black Indigenous people of color.
Anderson County 911, what's the location of your emergency? Ma'am, what's going on out there? You're saying a baby's missing in the night.
As well as nonprofit organizations.
When I was a private investigator 5 years ago, we picked up a case that was Shanice Harris' case.
That help and advocate families of lost loved ones with their closure.
From sometime from his shift at work to that next day, he was either robbed or apprehended at some point with someone coming into the restaurant.
And opening a cold case.
So that, to me, was his way out. And it negatively impacted Armani's investigation.
Please join me on Thursdays on any podcast platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
We are voiceless no more.
This week's podcast plug is Hands Off My Podcast, your go-to source for ethical true crime stories. Host Jasmine Castillo is committed to helping families find their lost loved ones by bringing awareness to the harsh realities of murder, missing persons, exploitation, human trafficking, and suicide. Mm-hmm. And you can join her bi-weekly on Thursdays for gripping episodes featuring stories from the communities she advocates for. Nice. And we will have a link to her show in the show notes.
Nice.
And literally yesterday, I got a message from our friend Brent.
Hi, Brent.
And he's trying to catch up. He's like binge listening to our back catalog. Mm-hmm. And he listened to the episode where our friend Jim from Film Rage had asked us about a bunch of Canadian foods to see if we had eaten any of them.
Yeah.
And he was like, I have two more foods for you that I want to see if you are familiar with them.
Okay.
One is a beaver tail.
I've heard of that. I think it's a donut.
I'm going to double check because I can't remember.
Yeah, I feel like it's like their answer to a bear claw.
Yeah, it's a pastry of some sort. It's a they're fried dough pastries. Mm-hmm. And they're stretched to resemble beaver's tails. It's kind of like, I would say it's a very flat version of like a funnel cake.
Mm-hmm. It's like a flatbread.
And then the other one is a prairie oyster.
Oh, is that like bull balls or something?
Yeah, I have heard of it. I have never eaten one. It's either a drink which contains a raw egg, which he would use as a hangover cure.
Hmm.
But the one that he meant was a dish consisting of cooked testicles from a young cow.
Yep.
I have not had that. And
I haven't had either. No.
So thanks, Brent. I love how you did like a sweet savory combo for that.
Something good, something really not so good.
Yeah, I would go for the sweet, but definitely not the salty savory. And as a reminder, if you would like to send in questions for us to answer on the show, you can either email us at yieldcrimepodcast@gmail.com, or we do have a link to our submissions form in our show notes. And on that note, what is something good you'd like to share?
Our move is almost complete.
Woo!
I'm wiping down the floors and the walls tomorrow, and then we're done. What about you?
I'm trying to be more productive.
Mm-hmm.
To, like, shake myself out of my depressive funk.
Mm-hmm.
And in the words of my therapist, try to focus on things that you can do that are not related to your job search, which is still not going well,
mm-hmm.
or to the demands you have on your time, like Girl Scouts mm-hmm. and doing stuff around the house and all of that. So I decided to assemble a light fixture.
Ooh.
I purchased it from IKEA.
Okay.
Back whenever we bought my youngest bunk bed. So. Okay. June of last year.
Oh, man. Yeah. Okay. So almost a year.
It's been sitting in a box, a tiny little box in my office for that long. I finally on Friday was like, I'm going to assemble this thing and I'm gonna hook it up.
Hell yeah.
It's like a fabric and it kind of looks like an upside down bundt cake.
Oh, nice.
And part of the reason I got it is because I thought it would brighten up the space. You may mm-hmm. notice that it's much brighter in my office.
It is much brighter.
Thomas helped me, so I was able to go to the circuit breaker and turn off the right, you know, thing so I don't mm-hmm. electrocute myself. And I took down the old fixture, and he showed me how to hook up the electrical to mm-hmm. adhere it to the ceiling. Unfortunately, the mounts were off by a little bit on, like, the fixture
oh,
itself.
No.
So we had to unscrew it, and then he had to drill a hole to make it line up.
That's not frustrating at all.
But it is up and I did it and I am very proud of myself for doing that and also learning how to safely uninstall and reinstall a new light fixture.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's super good.
So yeah. So if I want to replace more light fixtures throughout the home, which is an ongoing project that I would love to do,
mm-hmm.
I now know how to do it.
That's awesome.
All right. Shall we?
We shall.
A great way to support the show, if you can't do so financially but still want to help us out, is to leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, Good Pods, CastBox, Podcast Addict, and or Audible. Got something you want to say? Shoot us an email over at yieldcrimepodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your story ideas, see any gifts you send our way, or if you just want to say hello. We're pretty friendly. Speaking of friendly, if you'd like to have real-time conversations with us, consider joining our Discord over at the Cultivate Network. You can chat with us over at the Old Crimers Cubby, or catch up with any of the other great creators that are part of the Cultivate family of podcasts. Just click the link in our show notes or over on our link tree to get started today. I don't know when the Tee Public sales are going to be this month. To be continued. I'm sure I will have a list in the next episode. But keep your eyes peeled on social. And on that note, as always, I'm Lindsay.
And I'm Madison.
And we'll see you next time with another tale
as old as crime.